Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Running a published adventure that will span the majority of the careers of your PCs presents unique challenges. Will Johnson returns to the show today to discuss these challenges. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 38 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. I've got a great show for you today. This is the second of a three-part interview with Will Johnson about adventure paths or published campaigns and running them at your table. Today, we're going to discuss dealing with downtime and pacing in adventure paths, and we also talk about character development and customizing the published campaign to fit your particular group and your play styles. So I have a quick word from our sponsor, and then I will bring Will back on board the Obsidian Monolith to talk all about adventure paths. We all have busy lives, and the hustle and bustle of modern day living can often leave us feeling anxious and stressed. Do you find yourself longing for your free time, yet when it arrives, you can't unwind? Do you feel restless and on edge? Are you having trouble sleeping at night? Are you not finding satisfaction in your romantic relationships? If you are suffering from any of these symptoms, Audible Books is a new therapy that can help you escape from the grind of your routine. You can sit back, close your eyes, and enjoy a beautiful fantasy world, or explore the stars, all without leaving your most comfortable chair. Ask your doctor if Audible is right for you, and take the first step to a richer life today. You can try Audible for 30 days for free, courtesy of Starwalker Studios. Just visit the website for your favorite podcast at starwalkerstudios.com and go to the bottom of the latest episode show notes for details. Audible Books. Enjoy a good book today. So Paizo is really, at least to my knowledge, they're the ones that kind of basically invented the adventure path, and now D&D is doing it slightly differently, but
I'll give them a lot of credit for it. But I think that if you look back on it, TSR did some boxed campaigns before that that were just as comprehensive.
Okay.
I know that I ran Night Below, which was just a fantastic box set. Paizo's definitely come up with a formula that's fantastic. I don't know about you, but I was a reader of Dungeon Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I collected it. And so there was a point in time where I think Eric Mona, you know, mentioned, he goes, we're getting a lot of requests to kind of put together scenarios that would kind of make a campaign. And so we want to experiment with that. And I think that it was the Living City, the city, or the, I'm blanking on the name of it, the first one they did. But that was kind of the origin of it, was the Dungeon Magazine decided they wanted to make something into a comprehensive campaign. And they did, and it was really good. And then they decided to do another. And so, yeah, I think they're really well done. They all are 6 books. Typically, the formula is there's like 3 sections for each book.
Okay.
And so typically what you're going to look at is, I mean, if a group's really motoring, you might be able to get each section done in 2 nights or 2 game sessions. And so you're looking at, you know, per book about 12 game sessions, and, you know, over the course of a campaign, maybe 36 or more game sessions. So like you mentioned, if you're playing every other week, you're looking at maybe over a year, year and a half wouldn't be unusual.
Okay.
Yeah, for those. But yeah, they are really good, and I know that that's where the name Pathfinder came from, is that they were publishing Adventure Paths for 3.5, and in the course of 4th edition being released, they were trying to get the licensing to be able to publish them under 4th edition, and I don't know the details back and forth on that, but I know that during the course of this, Jason Bowman basically had his house rules for fixing 3.5. Mm-hmm. And so he sort of said, well, worst case scenario, we could run with my version of 3.5. And so they threw that up, Jason's version of 3.5 up on Paizo's website, and there was the huge playtest. And they needed to name it, and so they already had Adventure Paths, and so they called it Pathfinder.
Cool.
So that's what that was. And so, yeah, they've been really, really good. And, in fact, they're about to publish their 100th. I think their 100th one is coming up really soon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're great. And some of them are very railroady, and others are not. I think you mentioned that you started running Carrying Crown.
Yeah.
And that yeah. one's very railroad. I mean, you're chasing a group of people as they do horrific things, and you're always like one or two steps behind. And I mean, it's almost literally railroad.
Yeah.
I was skeptical to play it at first. It just didn't seem, it seemed like it was going to be a smorgasbord of undead and very railroady at that. And honestly, though, I had a really good time. We completed that one, and I enjoyed it a lot, but that's certainly the way that one was. And others, like Kingmaker, is another where it's much more open, where the players can kind of do what they want. There's no real hard timeline, and there's a lot of downtime opportunities. And so certain adventure paths are more railroady than others.
Very cool. So in the Pathfinder ones, by the time you finish this whole campaign, like what level are you usually?
It really depends. Typically, the most of them leave you right around 50th level.
Okay.
That would be the most common. However, there are, like, Wrath of the Righteous was the one where they're playing around with mythic levels. And so they introduced a book called a Mythic Source Book or Mythic. Anyway, the rules to play mythic characters. And so they're just super powered. And so the Wrath of the Righteous was sort of like, hey, we're going to just run the most nuts, you know, high level craziness ever. And so when you end that, you are level 20 and you have 10 mythic levels on top of that.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Wrath of the Righteous definitely is the one where you end up very high level. By the end of Rise of the Rune Lords, you should be close to 17th, 18th level. But on the other hand, you've got scenarios like the very first one I did in Pathfinder was called Council of Thieves. And that one is actually, you're right around 12th level when that one ends.
Okay.
They kind of vary, but the typical one leaves you about 15th level.
Okay.
Which is always sad because usually you make 15th level at the last encounter. And then you're kind of like, well, now I get to look at this character that's 15th level and maybe not do anything with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Now that brings me to a question that actually isn't part of our outline here, but
it's fine.
I know that you actually have experience with quite a few of the Paizo adventure paths. Do some of them or all of them kind of leave you with some kind of hanging threads? So if you end it, you can keep going and it kind of gives you something else to do or not?
Definitely. There's every single one of these ends with suggestions to the game master as to ways you could continue the story.
Oh, cool.
So there's certainly an opportunity to go farther or take your characters in a new directions and continue play. I know that we typically don't do that. You know, it's one of those things where I kind of look at these, you know, like a module and adventure path. It's almost like you're watching a movie or you're reading a book.
Right, right.
You're kind of there for the storyline that's being presented. And you want to kind of absorb that storyline. And so when it finishes, I mean, the game master can definitely add on to it or enhance it or go further. But we're there usually to sort of absorb that storyline.
Okay.
So I'd rather play in a game where it's completely out of the minds of the GM, I think, rather than, I don't know. It really, each player is going to have different feelings on that, I think, you know, in terms of how connected they are to that character. And that's something, I guess, for us to talk about in terms of when you are running a huge adventure like this, how much do you cater to the different players' opinions and desires to personalize things? I think that's one of the things that our experience has been that we just sort of stop. The scenario thing ended and we're done. We're on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah, I'm running Tyranny of Dragons right now, which is Wizards' basically adventure path for D&D. The first one, and it has a little bit at the end where it's like, you know, this is what comes next if the PCs succeed, this is what comes next if the PCs fail, but it doesn't really give you anything as far as like, this is how you could continue the story,
right?
And I asked my players in the very beginning, because I've always kind of run campaigns until people just can't take it anymore, And so I asked him, I was like, when this ends at 15th, 16th level, do you guys want to keep going or do you want to do something else? And they're like, oh, it'd be fun to play all the way to 20.
Right.
So I'm already looking for ideas and ways to kind of seed in things now that are going to, you know, kind of like hooks for the things I'm going to do after the campaign is over. But that's interesting.
What's the pacing? I know that the first one, because I've not really played much 5e or anything else, but I have looked over a bit of Horde, and it seems like the pacing on the first book is that it's very fast pace.
Yes.
You're kind of behind the eight ball. You need to constantly keep moving to keep on top of things.
Yeah.
Is the second book kind of paced the same way, or does it slow down, or...
I don't know. It's weird because you don't really have like necessarily like a ticking time bomb kind of thing, but what you're trying to stop is so catastrophic that I don't think that any players that are at all in character are going to be like, oh, I'm just going to take a month off and go fishing, you know?
Yeah.
So it is kind of fast paced. And that's one actual problem I have with the campaign is, you know, if you play it as written, which you kind of have to, unless you're really going to totally change it, you know, these characters are going to go from first level to 15th level in a very short amount of time, like probably less than a year.
Sure.
And that's just kind of like blows your mind, you know.
Yeah. With Wrath of the Righteous, we were actually leveling up at the very beginning every day. And so you're sitting there going, all right, I picked up a new skill. I learned linguistics. Last night in my sleep, I learned a new language. You know, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I don't know if you remember, it's like, it seemed like second edition and first edition, there was downtime. You needed training, you know, and I kind of missed that, you know, because that's not something that the current version, and I think a lot of that's the influence of video games.
Yeah.
People are used to the idea of just mid game, ding, and, you know, everything, I'm all of a sudden stronger and feel better. And so I think that's largely the influence of video games. But yeah, I take your point about the fact that you're, but I was just, for me, it was more along the lines of, if the party is constantly moving and constantly feels like they're, you know, it eliminates the opportunity for like downtime.
Right.
So, you know, there's the players that want to buy a bar and they want to fix it up. You're not able to, you know, really do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was curious. I don't know enough about the second book to know whether that keeps the pace going at the same speed or whether it has opportunities for the players to kind of experience some downtime and sort of stretch themselves in terms of what they're doing between fights or not. Because that, I think if I were you and I was going to do the 20th to 20th level, I think that's kind of what I would do. I would sort of say, hey, we're taking... You guys settle down for 3 years.
Yeah, right.
Let's talk about what you did in those 3 years.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, let people build lives and then take it all away from them as a GM. You know?
Yeah.
You know, because that's the best way to motivate players is to take their stuff. No, I mean, but I mean, along the lines of, you know, with the scenario like that where you're just constantly moving, I think it would be kind of neat for your players to sort of talk about, all right, what do we do now? You know, now that the threat is gone, what would my character do? You know, whether they would stick together or whether they would split up or whether that, you know, that kind of stuff's kind of interesting, I think, to explore as a player. And it probably will give you a lot of ideas as to how to continue that beyond whatever level they end at.
That's a great idea. I like the idea of, you know, you guys finish this huge campaign and it's kind of like you're kind of burnt out now. You know, you've had enough.
That's been a brutal year.
Yeah. So you guys go do whatever for 10 years or something and sure. You figure out, you know, who stays in touch, who doesn't. And then I come up with something that happens that maybe is tied into one of the seeds I planted way back when, that like now all these heroes have to come out of retirement and like form the Avengers again and go sure. Fight one last battle. And that'd be kind of fun.
I'm sure one of these villains that they fight has a teenage son who's has been nursing that grudge for 10 years.
Yeah, totally.
Is ready to ruin their lives. I think that would be the fun thing to do with the scenario of the campaign like that, where it's just so fast paced, is to kind of flip things around and let them calm down, because they only kind of know their own character in terms of the confrontations that they're constantly dealing with.
Right.
And, you know, the idea of what do you do when you're not at war, and that for some player characters that can be really interesting to see what they would do. So I think that's what I would do. That's where I would do, I think, if I were in your position. I'm running Rise of the Rune Lords right now.
Okay.
And we're in book three. We're about finished, almost finished with book three. The group I'm running for is a very casual group. They're all people I work with. A couple of them, it's the first time they've ever gamed. We potluck and drink and get maybe 2.5 hours of gaming in a 4-hour session.
Nice.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, it really is. It's a way to unwind and relax and enjoy company. And we're not real focused on chewing up material as fast as we can. But I do like to try to throw in stuff to allow them to feel like their characters are fleshed out, that it's not just that they're not just fodder for the plot line,
right?
And that can be tough. But two of the women are playing twins that are Varesian, which is sort of a gypsies in Varesia there. And they have their little wagon, their Varesian wagon, and nice. one's a fortune teller, and the other one performs as a contortionist. They're constantly talking about who gets to ride on the wagon and who doesn't, you know. So that kind of stuff becomes, you know, it ends up being almost as important, I think, as the plot line a lot of times, because that's the way that player connects with their character. And so anytime you can give them something that rewards that aspect of their character, it has a huge impact. Far more impact, I think, than handing them a magical item.
Yeah.
You know, it allows them, you're basically validating the choices they made, and you're validating the character that they want to play. And I think that's really important. And so I try to throw that in, but at the same time, we get so little done that you're kind of like, I don't have to. I mean, originally I wanted to run, I don't know if you've seen, they've got the card games out now for Pathfinder card game, and they have them for the various adventure paths.
Okay.
I thought it'd be a cool idea that when we finish a book, we maybe play the card game for that book, and that way there's no spoilers in terms of what they'd be facing in the adventure path. And I was sitting there going, it's just adding that much more time to running this. I'm already probably going to take 2 years to finish this.
Yeah.
Do I really want to add another half a year to the whole experience? And so I discarded that idea. And I'd love to do more side quests, but again, it's just one of those things where we don't really have the time. In one way, it's too bad, and in another way, they're really enjoying the storyline that the adventure path offers. And I think as long as that storyline is strong and compelling, I'm happy to provide that.
Yeah. So you kind of mentioned this a little bit, but when you're preparing to run one of these, how much do you customize the adventures to kind of fit your players, and how much do you just kind of run it by the book?
So one of the things I really like to do is I don't like to run them as they're being released.
Yeah.
There's a big advantage to waiting. And the reason for waiting is that Paizo will release more products to support their adventure paths. So they will release like a map pack, which depending on the adventure path, some of them are great. Others are a little weaker than others, but they basically provide really good maps oftentimes for the adventure path itself. They also will do what they call them pawns, where they are cardboard minis, and it'll be the exact minis for that particular adventure path, which is great. Or, you know, even sometimes they'll do the actual plastic minis for the, like Rise of the Rune Lords has plastic minis for it. But if you were running like as the books are being released, you're not going to have some of those resources. The other thing you're missing out on is if you go to Paizo's website, the message boards have really good information
for
players and GMs that have run those. And if you wait a while, you're going to get a lot of fantastic player-made products, especially with Roll20 being so popular. A lot of people are making just fantastic maps designed for Roll20, because some of the maps that are in the adventure paths, if it's an important big map, they usually have really good detail. But there's others where they don't have a lot of, it's not a real important setting, and so they may give a very small map that's maybe the size of a silver dollar, and you know, that's not going to be great if you're running in Roll20. And so some players build just fantastic detailed maps, and even though I don't run in Roll20, I run face to face. What I do is I take those, and if I need to add grid lines, I do using GIMP. And then I will print that on cardstock and then tape it down to like a foam board so that I've got a map that's, you know, nice looking for my players to use. And so I like that. I also like the fact that if you've read through all of the books of the Adventure Path, you will often find ways to tie things together and tie things to your players. And I think that's really critical. I mean, like we mentioned before, a lot of these adventure paths are kind of railroady. And so anytime you can tie something directly to a player, it doesn't feel as forced. And you can also create a really, like, some awkward situations that make really good role play. I don't want to spoiler anything at all, but I know that with Rise of the Rune Lords, I've had a situation where one of the players kind of made a ladies' man character.
Okay.
And so I took one of the villains that I knew that they were going to face in the first book, and I sort of mentioned that he'd recently had an affair with a person. She was kind of cold, definitely seemed to be just looking for a one-night stand. That was it. And so then, like, 9 weeks later, all of a sudden they stumble into the next room and there she is. And so there's that whole situation of, oh, you're a bad guy. You know? And so, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can have fun with that kind of stuff. And I know that I stole this from somebody else, but one of the things, Rise of the Rune Lords begins with a festival. Exactly. Uh-huh. And so one of the really cool things on the message boards that you'll find is players have and GMs have contributed ideas for things to do at the festival. And so players have come up with little games that the players can play while they're at the fair and stuff like that before the actual plot begins. And one of the things you can do with that is you can introduce some of the NPCs that are going to be important in a setting that is not tied to the plot line. And that can have a lot of impact. There's a family that has a tragic occurrence happen during gameplay, and being able to maybe allow one or two players to maybe interact with that family when they're happy and enjoying themselves at the fair really has a huge impact later when you actually introduce this tragedy that occurred. It really ends up making it really gripping. And so I think that that's kind of helpful. You really kind of need that opportunity to read through all of the books of the Adventure Path to kind of get an idea of where it's headed.
Yeah.
And that allows you to set up really cool plot hooks that maybe aren't built into the scenario because they don't know what kind of player characters are going to necessarily be playing, but will give you an opportunity to really tie things directly to the PCs so that the players are a little more heavily invested. And it also gives you an opportunity to realize, like, the direction this is going. Some of these adventure paths, Serpent Skull is an interesting adventure path in that the first book you're shipwrecked, the second book you're racing through the jungle, the third and fourth book you're kind of exploring an abandoned city, and then 5-6 is dungeon crawling. And so it's a very weird thematic adventure path. And so having a good idea of how that works allows you as the GM to set the expectations of your players, because a lot of them may be building everything around the expectation of that first book of we're playing Robinson Crusoe.
Right.
And then they get off the island and all of a sudden find that they're not as invested in the story anymore. So as a GM, knowing this is the direction things are going to go, I can really work with the players so that they understand exactly what they're getting into too.
Yeah.
The player's guides are supposed to do that, but sometimes it's not as good as having someone who, you know, the GM just working with the player.
Yeah, totally. I was actually just going to mention the player's guides because that's something really cool about the Paizo Adventure Paths that I wish Wizards would pick up on is when you go to play one of these, they have it's a free PDF, right? That the players can download and print out or not. And it might have like some feats or whatever, or little character options that are appropriate for that adventure path. But what I really like about it is they'll go through all the different classes and they're like, oh, if you're going to be a cleric, you know, these would be some really great domains that will really fit in the theme of this adventure path and stuff like that. And it's like the players can ignore that if they want, but if they follow that advice, like, they really end up with characters that, you know, like, for instance, if there's undead everywhere in the adventure path, you know, it might say, hey, a paladin would be a really awesome thing to play in this adventure, you know?
Right.
And obviously, the GM can do that, and I kind of tried to do that with Tyranny of Dragons, but it's kind of nice to have a product that does that. But I know that, I think it was Kingmaker, because I ran, like, the first book of Kingmaker, and...
Okay.
I totally second what you're saying about the Paizo forums, because I got so much great like information and player handouts that GMs made and all this stuff to add to my game from the forums. And I think it was Kingmaker. There was kind of debate because some GMs felt that the player's guide actually gave a little too much away, because it basically let the whole, you know, you're going to build a kingdom out of the bag from the very beginning. And some GMs kind of wanted to reveal that later.
Yeah, that's, that one was tricky, because Kingmaker came out before Paizo released their ultimate campaign book.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that stuff was new, and they had to explain the mechanics. And so I think they explained a lot of them as mechanics in the player's guide, which some GMs were hesitant to, they didn't really want their players to understand the mechanics.
Right.
They wanted to kind of make kingdom building, they wanted the, because honestly, the rules as written in Kingmaker were very easy to break.
Yes.
There were certain things, you know, hey, we're going to put wizard's towers in.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Everywhere. And then we're going to make another city, and it's just nothing but cemeteries. And that's going to make us a ton of money. And so, you know, there's certain things like that that were just really easy to game.
Yeah. And
Ultimate Campaign really fixed a lot of those problems. So if I think if I were to tell anybody who's thinking about running Kingmaker, I would tell them, use the Ultimate Campaign rules for downtime. They're much better constructed.
Yeah.
You're not going to have those problems. So I think that was the thing, is that a lot of GMs saw this and went, wow, these rules can be really manipulated badly. So I want to kind of keep them hidden from my players. And so I think a lot of them were kind of upset with what was maybe given away, you know, or the fact that you want to have a really high charisma king, you know,
right.
So, you know, which in my mind is pretty logical, but it, maybe if you don't spell it out, you're going to have a whole bunch of 7 charisma barbarians running around trying to run this kingdom, which in all honesty could be really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be a lot of fun.
There's a group that was playing out of Long Beach, and one of the players that ended up being the king was just playing as a despot. He was just constantly drunk and making horrible decisions. And it was really funny to hear how they wound up getting through the campaign. Just because he decided to make that choice rather than being completely practical. And I don't know how the other players felt about this.
So kind of a Robert Baratheon kind of king.
Yeah, exactly. He was totally doing that. That was exactly the way he was role-playing. And the others were just sort of going along with it. I think they were all like looting the treasury and stuff like that. And I mean, it's, you know, which can be fun if everybody's, that's the whole thing, is that if you get buy-in from your players, I mean, that kind of stuff can be a lot of fun.
Kneel before your king, you shits.
That's right. There's an actual play podcast of Kingmaker, and it's like everything that could possibly go wrong happens in that. And I want to say it's The Strand that did it, The Strand Gamers. At one point, they were joking about how the city streets were named after all their dead player characters. And, I mean, it was ridiculous listening to their Kingmaker podcast. Everything went wrong.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And that's another one where the expectations of the players, just they didn't realize what the way, because if you've read all of Kingmaker, you realize that at a certain point in time, your kingdom's going to go to war.
Yeah.
And the players in that group evidently weren't keyed into that. And so at one point, they discover that armies are marching on their kingdom. And what they're supposed to do at this point is rally armies so that they can meet on the battlefield and
right.
have these big mass combats. These guys immediately went, there's armies coming for our kingdom, we're screwed. And so they went home and decided that they were going to convince all their citizens to flee. And so they're telling everybody, hey, just pack up all your stuff. We need to get out of here. And it was just one of those things where the GM could have course corrected, but he just went along with it. It was kind of funny to hear, you know, at that point go, well, you know, you guys do have a few options here. You could do this or this or this in order to course correct for that, you know, in order to, you know, be prepared to meet these armies. But no, it was just sort of like, we need to flee. Loot the treasury. Let's take all the cash. We'll give out money to our citizens. We'll help them all flee to a neighboring kingdom. We're screwed. So I think that's one of the things where reading ahead of time to kind of understand what's going to be expected in each book, I think it really does help, because I'm a big believer in getting the cooperation of my players from the beginning so that you have buy-in, so that, you know, their PCs work in the game, and at the same time, they kind of have an expectation of what to expect from this campaign. Because, I mean, you know, if you're going to spend a year and a half together playing this, that's a lot of time. And so you don't want anybody to be playing something that I didn't think it was going to go this way. Why did I waste this time? You know, so yeah. I mean, that's, and so I really do want, I want all six books to be out, and I'd like to, you know, get some great information off of the forums, which I know is there. I'm really excited about the new adventure path that's coming out in July or August is Hell's Rebels. Ooh. And it's going to be a group of folks. Cheliax is the kingdom in Glorarian that is ruled by basically devil worshippers. And so they worship Asmodeus and the whole, it's a lawful evil kingdom. And so in Hell's Rebels, you are a group of people who are rebelling against the current administration. And so there's going to be a lot of, you know, fight the power and devils, and it should be a really good adventure path, and I'm really looking forward to it. I've got a group of people who want me to run it for them, and I'd love to, but at the same time, I don't want to, I want to wait. I want to, you know, I want a few of those books to be out there before I get started.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I definitely agree. I want to read the whole thing before I start.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 38 of Game Master's Journey. Thank you so much for tuning in today and listening to our discussion about adventure paths. I hope you're finding it as enlightening as I have. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can email Will at willj@cvpathfinder.com. Please follow me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit the website starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this episode and all the episodes of Game Master's Journey. You can also find the other podcasts I produce there. There's lots of helpful information in the show notes for this episode. For instance, you can find a link to our Google Plus community page. There is a nice red Google Plus button. You just click on that and it'll take you right there to our community. Also, at the top of the show notes, you can find links to some great ways that you can help support this show and help me make it a success. First of all, you will find our Patreon button, and that will take you to my page on Patreon where you can become a monthly supporter of the show. I really appreciate the patrons and everything they do to help keep this going. Also, at the top of the show notes, you will find the pink donate button where you can make a one-time donation, and you will also find the iTunes and Stitcher buttons, and those will take you directly to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, and you can subscribe there. Also, I really would appreciate it if you would leave a review for the show wherever you get it, iTunes, Stitcher, or elsewhere. Finally, at the bottom of the show notes are a couple more helpful links. You can get the link to the free 30-day trial of Audible books, courtesy of Game Master's Journey there. And you can also find the Amazon referral link at the bottom of the show notes. Once again, I want to thank you so much for supporting the show and supporting the studio. I really enjoy doing this, and I'd like to keep doing it for a good long while. So until next week, I hope you find a chance to play your RPG of choice. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.